Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about... Today I'm going to talk about the more than 200 types of philosophy. So I'm just simply cheating a bit here. I've got the Wikipedia page open with the alphabetical listing of 200 types of philosophy. Now, the way that I've sort of gone into this is to sort of start with a scientific question, like the origin of maths or the origin of our what we're teaching at school. What's the philosophical background? And as you go, you see that one school of philosophy is linked to another and it's responding to another and it goes back. And the way that I originally and still do it is have the first 30 philosophers just so I can get them in order and structure like that. But it comes out that there's many cultures, many philosophers, and it's just, I suppose, a point of thought that there's been so many tilts at this, and sort of is there a fundamental view as to what is a philosophy? So philosophy is a sort of a structure of knowledge. Now that's going to go through reading A, absurdism. In the philosophy of the absurd refers to the conflict between human tendency to seek inherent value and meaning in life and human's inability to find purposelessness. So this is absurdist. So I know a lot of people who do that. Actual ideism is a form developed by Giovanni Gentile. It grew of grounded idealism, contrasting with transcendental idealism of Immanuel Kant. So this is the practical stuff. Now, this is one of the stuff I've got to get to do. They're trying to figure out what God meant, and this is sort of practical idealism. Actualism. This is... I don't know how to read this. It's... actualism is the view that everything there is actual. Everything there is actual. Another paraphrasing of this thesis is that the domain of unrestricted qualification ranges only over actually existing things. So I suppose that actualism is like, I wonder how that deals with this. Actualism. Avidita Vedanta is a Hindu philosophy believed to the classic path of Hindu realization. Is the idea that the true self is the same as the highest metaphysical reality. Whatever that means. Aesthetic realism is a philosophy founded in 1941 by the American poet Elie Wiesel. He defined three part studies. One, man's greatest, deepest desire is to like the world honestly. Two, the one way to like the world honestly is not as a conquest of one's own, but to see. Is to see the world as an aesthetic oneness of opposites. Three, the greatest danger or temptation of man is to get a false importance of the glory from lessening the things, not himself, which is lessening his contempt. I sort of perhaps that probably actually describes me in terms of I think this is so. Now, aesthetics, which is nature of arts, and I think that aesthetic realism is pretty close to me, the aesthetics that of appreciating art and beauty, a particular taste. African philosophy, which is discourse produced by indigenous Africans about then their descendants. Afrocentricism is like Eurocentricism. Everything's explained out of Africa. A gentle realism. So I love the idea of agents. According to Karen Barnard's theory of a gentle realism, the universe comprises of phenomena which are ontologically inseparability of interacting agencies. So, I like the idea of an agent is a process. Agnosticism, which I think is just to say that philosophy is too hard. American philosophy is it, but how great the Defining the core and defining features of American philosophy can be never seen, basically reflecting and shaping the collective American identity. America is the center of the universe. Anarchy, which is just everyone doing their own thing. There's no authorities. Animism is the objects and things have actual spirits around you. So I think there's still much, very much that theory in sort of the indigenous Indonesia and in the rainforest that there's spirits and everything, which is actually a good way of thinking, I think. Okay, antinatalism, that is the hatred of babies, that we should actually just kill ourselves off like that, antinatalist. I'm an aesthetic realist antinatalist. Anti-realism is an epistemological position first articulated by the British philosopher Michael Drummett, very famous person. The term was coined as an argument against the form of realism, Drummett saw as colourless reductionism, which, okay. Now, there's anti-reductionalism, which is a position that science and metaphysics that stands in contrast to reductionist anti-holism, by advocating that all properties of a system can be explained in terms of constituent parts and interactions. I sort of agree with that. I sort of like systems and you should have a systems agency and to look at the higher level type of stuff. Especially when you're knocked out of the actual system yourself, you have to sort of think about, oh, how can I interact with this such that I can affect change, even though I've been classed as someone who cannot affect change. Analytic philosophy. The style of philosophy became dominant in the Western world at the beginning of the 20th century. The term... So analytical philosophy, I sort of like that. And we're just in the A's. Emphasis on argument, clarity, and precision. The use of formal logic. Bertrand Russell is one of the person. Here they've got central figures in the historical development of Bertrand Russell, Wittgenstein, G.E. Moore, Gottlieb Frege, and the logical positivists. Sort of I rather like this is because you can actually run, you know, eventually run this into a computer. And it says the principle of logic, clarified thoughts achieved only through analysis and logical propositions. I sort of rather like it because it's really close to mathematics. Now, anarchy and anarchism, it seems pretty much the same thing. Ancient philosophy... I don't know what that actually means. This is a philosophy, so these are just links to other pages which are generally philosophy. But ancient philosophy is anything of the Roman Empire, Hellenistic. Anthropocentrism is a belief that human beings are the most important entity in the universe. I think Donald Trump and various people think that. Anthropocentrism interprets or regards the world in terms of human values and experiences. The term can be used interchangeably with human-centropism. So there is this view that the universe is explicable because it's one in which humans can exist to wonder about it. Anomalous monism. Now, monads is the idea of a single monad. I wonder if monadism is in there. We're only going to go through the A's. The monadism, monism is Pythagoras put a single dot and a circle and said that is a unit of knowledge. That little dot there. And so if we build it up, the dots of knowledge are going. Anomalous monism might be anti-reductionist, aesthetic realism, anti-reductionist. Anomalous monism. I wonder what that is. So let's read about this. It's a philosophical thesis about mind-body relationship. It was first proposed by Donald Davidson in the 1970s. Papal mental events. The theory is twofold and states that mental events are identical with physical events and the mental is anomalous and that the mental anomalous. This is something pretty big. So I'm just trying to get your name about it. Save, thank you. So anomalous monism. Okay. it's a type identity theory. It's probably a little bit Davison's classical argument for AM. So let's read that one. Okay. There's step one. The principle of causal interaction. There exists both mental to physical as well as physical to mental causal interactions. What? The principle of nomological character of causality. So all events are causally related through strict laws. Okay. The principle of phenomenalism of the mental. There are no psychophysical laws which relate the mental and physical as just that, the mental and physical. That speaks to me as perhaps you need monism, you need a theory above it to actually, even if it's wrong, to maneuver around to another theory. So I've got this idea that bad philosophies aren't necessarily, it's like bad gut bacteria, they play a role in the ecosystem of ideas. Applied ethics, I like this, and this is basically the practical application of moral considerations. So you've got the Stoicists, the ethicists, Locke, the ethical philosophy of Locke and the American Constitution comes up. It's pretty Aristotelicism. I wonder what that actually means. It means that you can actually work it out. This is a school of thought in the modern sense of philosophy. It covers existence, ethics, minds, and related subjects. In Aristotle's time, philosophy studies included philosophy, which preceded the advent of modern science during the scientific revolution. So this is like pre-baby science, sort of, it's like mad home. It's sort of science you think you'd visit an old person's home and you get these memories and these circular, people can't do anything because they haven't actually invented science yet, so they're sitting in their chairs not doing much. Aestheticism, I think I like that one. Authoritarianism is perhaps what schools are oriented, society's oriented on. And Averroism refers to a school of medieval philosophy based on the application of the works of the 12th century Andal Islamic philosophy. Averroes, a Muslim commentator on Aristotle. Wow, I've got to read about that one. And there's Jewish Aristotle, reception of Aristotle in Islam, references bibliography, and scholasticism. The scholastic is the most insane way, sort of like working out the future from a shopping catalogue. You know, it's from Myers. That's much better than from a sort of the local supermarket, because Myers is a much bigger place, that type of stuff. Myers is a school. Okay, now the standpoints listed above result in two commendations of 1270 and 1277 by the Bishop Etienne Templer of the Roman Catholic Church. Whoa! So we've got two things. The term Averroist was coined by Thomas Aquinas. I love him. In the restricted sense, that Averroist unity of intellect doctrine in the book De Une Intellect Contra Averroitas. So he's... What does the unity of intellect mean? Well, I have to go back. So, as a historiographical character, Averroes was first defined by Emmett Rennet in 1852 in the sense of heterodox Aristotelianism. So, what the heck? So, Aristotle basically is philosophy as thinking machinery. It's sort of like pre-science. And it's something which is a medieval thing. I just can't work out exactly what it is. So he has got Aristotle the wrong way. Okay, so the Aristotle has tried to demonstrate to be unjustified in the incoherence of the incoherence, whatever that means. Can you imagine in the Middle Ages people being absolutely besotted by it, not being able to understand problems? To resolve the problem, Sir Barr Branch claimed that there existed double truth, a factual hard truth that is searched through science and philosophy, and a religious truth that is reached through religion. The idea differed from Aristotle. He taught that there is only one truth, but reached in two different ways, not two truths. He did, however, believe the scripture sometimes used metaphorical language about those without philosophical training to appreciate the true meaning of the passages in questions were obliged to believe in the literal meaning. Yeah, this Philo was saying, people have been saying, doing it right up to, what is it, Thomas Jefferson. This is a Jefferson Bible, the Bible without the unbelievable bits in it. Very slim Bible. Okay. So now, avaricism, and now this is avescentism. A school of Islamic philosophy, which was established by Avicenna, he held his philosophy throughout the course of his life after being deeply moved and concerned by the metaphysics of Aristotle and studying it over a year. So you can sort of see the pragmatic guides sent by Muhammad would clash with Aristotle. Let's read this a bit more. Sorry. I'm going to enable page preview. So... okay. It's part of Eastern philosophy, Iranian philosophy. You really want to actually understand this. Okay, this is, it's got, because these philosophies might be difference. He showed that we can see three different schools. This is Henry Corbin, which whoever he is, sounds a very interesting person. He showed that we can see three different schools in Avicennism, which he called the Avicennizing Augustinism, Latin Avicennism, and Iranian Avicennism. That's something I'm going to come back and really study, because I think we might understand what's happening in the Arab world if we actually go back and study this. And I don't think people really understand Augustus and the idea of the medieval thought of shouting loudest and not believing things, and the idea... you can see the Augustan medieval thought is still alive in climate change debate. That there are people who are not completely convinced. It's really like you need 100% people, and I can task, it's sort of the force of argument, right? That's rhetoric. So Augustus rhetoric. So it'd be really interesting to see how that axiology is a philosophical study. Value, worth of value, either the collective term of ethics and aesthetics, philosophical field that depends crucially on the notion of worth or the foundation of these fields, thus similar to value theory and meta-ethics. The term was first used by Paul Lepel in 1902 and Edward von Hartmann in 1908, which is interesting. Axiology studies two kinds of values, ethics and aesthetics. So ethics is basically, as far as I can see, using your knowledge to behave in a way which is of maximum benefit. You've got to know the past, predict the future, and have an ability to judge. If you someone who's got no arms, no legs, can't move around, bless you, can't, the question of you saving someone from walking across the train track is not there. You don't have the capability. If you don't know the train is coming, or you don't know that train is coming, you can't do it. So ethics is something which is given to you by knowledge. It's something like that. Aesthetics is also an interesting aspect. If you have no aesthetics, there's no reason for anyone to live and all that type of stuff. Ethics investigates the concept of right and good in individual social construct. So what is it? It was Philippa Foot who said there's Weak words and strong words, good and bad are weak, and courageous and fearful are strong. It's really interesting. Aesthetics is the study of concepts of beauty and harmony. Formal axiology, which is what we're looking at, the attempt to lay out the principles regarding the value in with mathematical, is exemplified. So I sort of like that, the science of value. It really does come down to predict the future, you need Bayesian theory. Bayesian theory, you need maths. So the big question is that there's the sort of meta ethics that if my individuals, if their capacity for ethics is limited by their mathematical ability, I have to actually say that. Ba'athism, is an Arab nationalist ideology that promotes development and creation of a united Arab state through the leadership of a vanguard party over progressive revolutionary governments. So the Ba'ath Party. Bioconservatism, I think we know that. Bioethics is a study of biology and medicine, which has got moral discernment. Now, biolibertarianism, which is assisted reproductive technology, are medical procedures used primarily to address infertility. It includes procedures such as in vitro fertilization. So this is to do with all your babies. Biosophy, meaning wisdom of life, the science and art of intelligent living based on awareness and practice of spiritual values. Wow, that sounds beautiful. Buddhist philosophy, I think, is almost too big. Calvinism. So we've done A, B, C. Calvinism. It seems a bit of someone who's trying to kill joy. A major branch of the Protestantism that follows the theological tradition and forms of Christians drawn by John Calvin, other Reformation era theologians. They're obviously not a lot of fun. Capitalism. The idea of private ownership and the unseen hand, and that if you have something manifestly unfair, and, you know, the ownership, you know, someone owns property, how do they own the property? Will they amass money? There's this sort of respective thing that my values correspond to a game of chance. Going back, you know, why is someone poor and working for someone who's rich? You know, why does someone rich own the mechanisms of production, so you can only just, you can bid down the rent of labor and actually keep that richness? And it's sort of, it's an apology for how things works. Now it is sort of these things that if you leave things alone, society will organize its own mathematical system. It's naturally good, but I think capitalism is sort of running out of my own views. It doesn't have the intellect to understand that I'm going to mine and destroy the planet, or I'm going to essentially go and capitalism plus insanity leads to supercharged insanity, as far as I can see. Cartesianism by Rene Cartes, the Cartesian method. I sort of like this is a noble idea, and I think Descartes says that I should see things in an unbroken chain of logic, but he also says things are true because they just really feel true, they have the quality of truth, and you go, oh, like this. And his understanding of science, I think, is superior, in my view, to Newton, who Newton said, I'd offer no, I wonder if Newtonianism is there, offer no explanation. And he said, look, Cartesian offered explanation. He said that your understanding has to be founded on explanations, where Newton said, well, God does everything, and I'm just explaining God. And people say, oh, this is great science. Well, not perhaps. So Descartes is there, and he's such an eloquent speaker. So there's things where he said, schools had a parody of reason, which is there, and he also said that common sense of all God's gifts is the most equitably distributed, because those who don't have enough always feel they have enough. No matter how much they want of common sense, they feel that they have enough. So that's beautiful. And this is the beautiful way of speaking. Now, the Cartesian people clashed with Newton. Cartological imperative is the central philosophical concept in the deontological moral philosophy of Immanuel Kant. So I don't know, I don't really myself understand what ontological actually means, but it's of Kant. So categorical imperative. So let's read a bit about that. It may be defined by ways of evaluating motivation of actions, categories. So what on earth is that? The hypothetical imperatives apply to someone who wishes to attain certain ends. For example, I must drink something to quench my thirst, I must study to pass the exam. The categorical imperative, on the other hand, denotes an absolute unconditional requirement that must be obeyed in all circumstances and is justified as an end in itself. It is best known formulation. Act only according to that maxim whereby you can, at the same time, will that it should become a universal law. That does my head in. I've got to reread Kant again. What is it? Kant expressed extreme dissatisfaction with the popular moral philosophy of his day, believing that it could never surpass the level of hypothetical imperatives. A utilitarian says that a murder is wrong because it does not maximize the good for those involved, but is irrelevant to people who are concerned only with maximizing the positive outcomes for themselves. Consequently, Kant argued, hypothetical moral systems cannot persuade moral action or be regarded as a basis for moral judgments against each other, because imperatives on which they are based rely too heavily on subjective consideration. He presented a deontological moral system based on demands of categories imperatives as alternatives. So this all sparked out by, this is all set on place by Newton about, you know, can I have a law? And he's actually trying to, you can actually see Kant trying to derive a law of gravity, like a law of gravity, a law of morals going through there. I wish I could understand this more. Chaos theory, which I really like, is a non-diagonalizable, mathematically it's really simple. You've got Hamiltonians and Hamiltonians, which are non-diagonalizable. You can't diagonalize the Hamiltonian. You can't find a system in which it is. Means that something is infinitely sensitive to its starting conditions, therefore is effectively random. And so you have this system of chaos, and chaos has boundaries and limits that systems will follow for laws. It's a more complicated way of doing things. I really like that. Now, Charvaka. Charvaka, what does that mean? Charvaka, also known as Lokyata, is an ancient school of Indian materialism. Charvaka holds direct perception, empiricism, and conditional inference as proper sources of knowledge, embraces philosophical skepticism, and rejects ritualism and supernaturalism. Whoa! Wow! This is going the wrong way. It's a Hindu philosophy. It's dating back to 1500 before Christ. It's a Hindu Reformation. The Hindu Reformation happened at 600 years before Christ. And that Jainism, which we'll cover, is you're not allowed to step on ants and things like that. The philosophy was well documented and refuted by new religions. You want to refute it, wouldn't you? If you got someone saying, well, really, science is the way to go. But this is interesting. Much of the primary literature is the Bharaspara Sutras were lost either due to waning popularity or other unknown reasons, i.e. it really upset the apple cart if you wanted to talk about miracles. Its teachings have been compiled from historic secondary literature. So this is those found that Satya Sutra and Indian epic poetry, as well as dialogues from Gautama Buddha and Jain literature. Whoa. One of the widely studied principles of philosophy was the rejection of inference as a means of establishing valid universal knowledge and metaphysical truths. In other words, Charvaka epistemology states that whenever one infers a truth from a set of observational truths, one must acknowledge doubt. Inferred knowledge is conditional. It is actually sort of like pre-induction, sort of a step towards it. Definitely want to echo. Now, it's a heterodox school of Indian philosophy, considered an example of the ascetic schools of Hindu religion. Well, I'm sure that's the way it's stated at the moment, back then, if you ever go into it. I'm only three: Chinese naturalism, Chinese philosophy, Christian existentialism. I'm sorry for going over Chinese naturalism, Chinese philosophy. This is too broad for me. Christian existentialism. Okay. Is a philosophical movement which takes existential approach to Christian theology. So I really know, or I'll have to really, what existentialism is. The school of thought is often traced back to the Danish philosophy Søren Kierkegaard. The existential approach to Christian theology has a long and diverse history, including Augustine, Aquinas, Pascal, and Martin. That's interesting. We'll just stop here and see what existentialism is. A tradition of philosophy inquiry which takes as a starting point the experience of human subject, not merely the thinking subject, but acting, feeling, living human individual. It is associated mainly with certain European philosophers. I can see niche in there. Let's go. I really don't quite understand it. So the Søren Kierkegaard is generally considered to have the first existentialist philosopher. Although he did not use the term existentialism, he proposed that each individual, not society or religion, is solely responsible for giving meaning to life and living it passionately with sincere authenticity. Wow. I certainly feel like that, especially if you're kicked out of your society. You have to be existentialist. Existentialism became popular in the years following World War II, thanks to Sartre, John Hegger, while in the POW camp, and strongly influenced by many disciplines beside philosophy, including theology, drama, art, literature. Now, epistemology, that will help me explain it. The term existentialism, French L'existentialisme, was coined by the French Catholic philosopher Gabriel Marcel in the mid-1940s. At first, when Marcel applied it to the term of Jean-Paul Sartre as a colloquium in 1945, Sartre rejected. Sartre subsequently changed his mind. In 1945, publicly adopted the existentialist label and the lecture of Club Maintenant in Paris. The lecture was published. Existentialism is a Humanism, a short book which did much to popularize the existentialist thought. Marcel later came to reject the label himself in favor of the Neo-Socratic in honor of Kierkegaard's essay on the concept of irony. So, Socrates is dialogue. Plato, I'm just trying to. Plato has got your theories of existing forms, and I'm just wondering what existentialism. Label existential and existential are often seen as historical convenience, inasmuch as they were first applied to many philosophers in hindsight, long after they had died. In fact, while existentialism is generally considered to have originated with Kierkegaard, the first prominent existential philosopher to adopt the term as a self-description as Jean-Paul Sartre. Sartre posits the idea, what all existences have in common is the fundamental doctrine that existence precedes essence. As a scholar, so that's interesting. My existence is primary, and then I build in, my existence is my sack, and I build in things, and ultimately there's no such thing as a global philosophy, so it must be personal. Let's see. According to philosopher Stephen Crowell, defining existentialism has been relatively difficult. As he argues, it is better understood as a general approach used to reject certain systematic philosophies rather than a systematic philosophy itself. Sartre himself, in a lecture at 1145, describes existentialism as an attempt to draw all the consequences from a position of consistent atheism. Well, that's an interesting thing. So it's an atheistic philosophy. So that was Christian existentialism. So Christian humanism, Christian philosophy, collectivism. Now, collectivism is interesting here. That groups have a collective worldview. I sort of agree that is the only really way that I can talk, interact with another person, that there's collective ideas, collective things. This, anything else is a power system, and it ultimately leads to boredom. Cognitivism is a meta-ethical view that ethical sentences express propositions and therefore can be true or false. So this cognitivism is... there's certain schools of thought which have this, you know, it can be true or false, and essentially you can only do this true or false thing, you can only actually do a very small section of thought with it. Cognitivism is so broad a thesis that it encompasses moralism, ethical subjectivism, error theory, and communitarianism. So let's try and do that one. What does that one? That sounds like communism. It's a philosophy that emphasizes the connection between individual and community. Its overriding philosophy is based on the belief that a person's social identity and personal identity are largely modeled by community relationships. So communitarianism. So it's interesting that you've got existentialism and communitarianism seems to be here. So this is really interesting. You've got a little diagram here, and I might describe it to you. So they've got, I love this thing. So they've got economic focus on community. So you can be leftist or communitarianism, or the cultural focus on community. You can be right, economic focus on individual or rightism. Oh, so it is sort of like the opposite of being an individual, as far as I can see. So you can be left or right, individual or communitarianism. So you can be a right-wing communitarianism. It's interesting in that it separates out right-wing and left-wing politics. It's sort of like a very interesting thing you could do. Compatibilism and incompatibilism. It sounds like me here. Let's see if we've got this one. Is a belief that free will and determinists are mutually compatible. And it is possible to believe in both without being logically inconsistent. That's interesting. Because there's always been this entire thing of free will or not. But I think your choice there. And I'm going to have to probably stop here and just have a look at this, and I'll go back to it. podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.